I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is The Connection. While the American people sought the safety of sleep last night, leaders from around the world expressed their reactions to yesterday's unprecedented terrorist attacks.
As for those that carried out these attacks, there are no adequate words of condemnation. Their barbarism will stand as their shame for all eternity. This mass terrorism is the new evil in our world. The people who perpetrate it have no regard whatever for the sanctity or value of human life. And we, the democracies of the world, must come together to defeat it and eradicate it.
Столкнулись с беспрецедентным актом агрессии со стороны международного терроризма.
We have encountered an unprecedented act of aggression by international terrorism. Primarily, I express sincere, profound condolences to everyone affected and the families of those killed. Today's developments in the United States go beyond national borders. This is a brazen challenge to all of humankind, at least to all of civilized humankind.
At this critical moment, the United States can rely on its 18 allies in North America and Europe for both assistance and for support. NATO solidarity remains the essence of our alliance. Our message to the people of the United States is that we are with you. Our message to those who perpetrated these unspeakable crimes is equally clear. You will not get away with it.
There can be no doubt that these attacks are deliberate acts of terrorism, carefully planned and coordinated, and as such, I condemn them utterly. In such moments, cool and reasoned judgment.
UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, just one of the world leaders speaking. We heard British Prime Minister Tony Blair, the Russian President Vladimir Putin, and NATO Secretary General George Robertson united in shock, and one can assume standing behind America as President Bush begins to formulate what his next step will be. Just 25 minutes ago, we heard from President Bush. He was speaking in the cabinet room at the White House. He described yesterday's events as an act of war against perpetrated by an enemy who hides in shadows. He said, Washington was back to business, but not business as usual. And quite possibly what he meant by business as usual is that American policy will no longer be business as usual as well, as America seeks those whose actions cost so many lives yesterday. We're going to be talking in this hour about the security situation, Connection listeners. We're going to be talking about the security lapses that led to yesterday's events. We're going to be talking about who possibly perpetrated this act. The finger is increasingly pointing towards the Middle East, towards Afghanistan, towards Osama bin Laden. And we're going to talk in an informed way about what the next steps might be. Questions that come to mind, how could this have happened? Questions that come to mind for Connection listeners, what is the appropriate response? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK makes the day after Connection. In this hour, I'm joined in the studio by Barry Posen, professor of political science in the Security Studies Department at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Larry Goodson, who is the associate professor of international studies at Bentley College in Massachusetts and author of Afghanistan's Endless War, who's traveled extensively in Afghanistan. And joining me now on the line is retired U.S. Army General Wesley Clark, author of Waging Modern War. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
General Clark, let me come to you first. The president described yesterday's events as an act of war. He couldn't quite declare war because there's no state to declare war on. But do you think that America is on a war footing now?
Well, I think the American people have received a tremendous shock from this, and it is a wake-up call. War has been declared on us by Osama bin Laden and a whole shadowy network of terrorist organizations for some time. And we've responded quietly, also keeping it from the front pages. But yesterday's attack is an incredible escalation in the scale and scope, the complexity of the operation.
And do you feel confident in saying that this is an act perpetrated by Osama bin Laden?
No, I think that he's at the top of the list of suspects, but an act like this probably has state sponsors as well, and it involves ultimately organizations that have probably tens of thousands of members. No, don't focus on one man. Focus on a terrorist network with roots in one or more states.
What states, Barry Posen?
Well, I mean, they're obvious suspects, but all you can do is speculate at this point. The Afghanistan is an obvious suspect. The participation, either sanctioned or unsanctioned by the own government of intelligence agencies of other Middle East countries, perhaps Iraq, perhaps Iran. These are the obvious suspects, but you know, we've been wrong before, so I think one wants to launch a very, very serious investigation at this point to try and figure it out.
General Clark, your current book is called Waging Modern War. Is this the face of modern war? I think you were, of course, writing about the Balkans, but is this the true face of modern war, at least so far as America's direct involvement?
Well, America has no enemy that can challenge it directly. It has to expect that when it's challenged, it will be challenged in asymmetric ways, and this is one form of asymmetric attack. There's been a lot of discussion about these. It could have been cyber terrorism. It could have been nuclear or biological terrorism. This happens to have been using aircraft as weapons. But it's the same. It's organizations and people that don't reveal themselves using covert methods to attack innocent people.
Larry Goodson, although we won't until all of the facts are known or proper allegation is made, say Osama bin Laden did this, but he is clearly the top suspect. And could you tell us a bit about him?
Bin Laden is an Arab from Saudi Arabian descent who has been in Afghanistan along with a number of other Arabs for many, many years, off and on. We actually, the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, during the 1980s, had a large hand in running the Afghan war against the Soviet Union. And there were a number in those days, we supported the idea of Arab fighters who wanted to go and participate, although for the most part, the Afghans did not. Bin Laden went in those days. He was a much younger man then. And in the early 1990s, sort of cobbled together a loose network of fellow travelers and began to shift the focus in the wake of the collapse of the Soviet Union towards challenging the West. And of course, as General Clark said, he's been a sort of unremitting enemy for some years now.
Barry Posen, is there not a sense Osama bin Laden was armed by the U.S. considerably, and that was at a time when the world was divided into, you know, the Soviet camp, the American camp, and those days are a good decade gone. Now, we would mothball weapons that are no longer of use. Is there never thought to mothball our personal, our human assets when they are no longer of use?
Well, you know, we're into the politics already, and, you know,
how could you avoid it?
Yeah, it's very hard to avoid talking about the politics already, but I mean, we have to understand America's still dealing with this tragedy on a very human level. This is a very shocking set of events. The human costs are very, very high, and it's almost unseemly to be talking the politics of this, but that's what we're going to do this hour. But we have to understand that, you know, in a way it's almost premature. I guess my own view is, yes, we, the United States, other countries, trained a lot of people to do various kinds of dangerous and violent things during the Cold War, and the kind of the underside, the secret side of the Cold War. But many such people are happily retired. It takes politics to drive something like this. And I think one of the questions we're going to be asking, so that we better understand what our response can be, is not just who are these people, but why are they doing what they're doing? What's the motivation here? In other words, the president used the language of war today. I mean, in Western thinking about war, war is an extension of politics. It's pursuit of political goals. The president tried to summarize what he thinks the political goals of these organizations are. It's hard to know whether those general goals really are their objective. It seems like there are people in certain parts of the world that they're against America's great power. They're against the power of world capitalism. They're against the forces of modernity. They feel great forces in the world pressing in on them, and they use the political tensions created by fear of that forces, those forces in large numbers of people, to organize and to find people who are sufficiently fanatical, sufficiently scared, sufficiently motivated to be able to participate in the kind of, you know, almost unspeakable acts that we saw the other day. People are willing to immolate themselves while immolating thousands and thousands of people that they've never met, whose role in this they themselves don't even really know or understand.
General Clark, do you agree with that distinction between the kind of warfare being waged by people who don't use war as an extension of policy?
Well, I think there is an extension of policy here. I think this is an attack on the United States, and it's just using a different method. States who would be hostile to us know that they can't survive and wage open warfare on the United States. So they use groups like Osama bin Laden. They cooperate, they support, they encourage, and they fund. And he then becomes the figurehead that lets them hide. But make no mistake about it, this is an attack on the United States.
General Clark, let me ask you.
An attack on what we represent and on our government and our people, our values. It's an attack on the West, but it's an attack on the whole air transport situation, system in this case, that makes our civilization work.
General Clark, what do you imagine the steps to prepare are being taken now by the American military?
Well, the first thing, of course, is to find out and ascertain who did this.
How do they do that?
And
how would they do that, General Clark?
Yes, we are trying to find out who did this.
But how? Is this the National Security Agency? Is this using informants on the ground? Is there a high-tech way of finding out?
There will be many ways of finding out. There are high-tech and low-tech. There are rumors. There are diplomats who talk to others. There are high-tech means. It's a vast interrelated network, but it has to be sifted. And you don't always get to ask directly the question that you want answered, and you don't always get a direct answer. So whether this takes a day or a week or a month, you can be sure this is a highest priority effort of the United States government and most of our allied governments at this time. Now, once that's done, then we'll have to figure out what the response is. But we'll, in our armed forces, already be looking at how to take action. Of course, one option is you can use a cruise missile strike. But this is not about retaliation. This is about taking out, dismantling, dismembering, destroying the organization.
Yeah, this is a critical difference, I think. After the bin Laden-sponsored attacks in Kenya and Tanzania, there seemed to be just a sense of lashing out. That was President Clinton's response. What we're talking about here is an escalation, a response, a massive degree higher. We're talking about something much more serious. I think we may have lost General Clark there. But we're coming up to the break, and perhaps while the break is on, we can recapture him. We'll be talking more about this subject just after the break. You're listening to The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WB.
I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is the Day After Connection. We're talking in this hour about the security questions raised by yesterday's events. We're talking about them with retired U.S. Army General Wesley Clark and with Barry Posen of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and with Larry Goodson of Bentley College here in Massachusetts, and author of Afghanistan's Endless War. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Larry Goodson, what kind of military action is possible in a place like Afghanistan?
Well, I wanted to come to that, which General Clark had just talked about a few moments ago. We are facing, I think, a war situation. We have been for some time with Osama bin Laden, although, of course, we don't yet know with certainty that this set of events has occurred sort of by his direction. But to go after bin Laden in Afghanistan, you mentioned a minute ago that in 1998, after the embassy bombings, we attempted that in a sort of lashing out way with cruise missiles. It's actually rather difficult to do. We have mounted and considered mounting a number of times operations whereby commandos or special forces would go in. It will be difficult because Afghanistan is extremely rugged. It is in many ways cut off from the world, in part by the very sanctions that we in the United Nations have imposed. And most of the countries that surround it that would normally provide our point of ingress, like Pakistan, for example, have a lot of sort of fellow travelers, people who are hostile and angry with the West.
You were talking of possible invasion. It does seem quite an extraordinary thought. General Clark, I mean, do you think that in this situation we could expect to see American forces, if it seems pretty clear that the attack came from the region, that we would expect to see American forces? Do you think that what the president has just been discussing or announcing to the American people means that he is prepared to do something that, you know, for the last 30 years almost, you know, because you had to pry support out of Washington for NATO's actions in the Balkans. Do you think that we've now stepped up and that the president has made it clear that American troops will go anywhere to find?
I think this is a different case, absolutely. I think there's no question that in principle American troops will be used here. But there are options. There is a cruise missile strike. You can go to host governments, and you can ask host governments to take actions for you. You can accompany them with advisors. You can go in covertly with small teams on the ground and then use them to call in the cruise precision strikes from aircraft or cruise missiles or whatever. There are a variety of techniques that can be used here, and probably all will be employed at one time or another.
Let me ask you, General Clark, by any means necessary, the problem with this strike is perhaps the indications are that many of the soldiers who carried this out, let's call them soldiers. If we're calling it war, let's call them soldiers, actually are on American soil. Would you see the American military being used in domestic pursuit of suspects?
Certainly not. There's no reason to use the American military. We've got perfectly adequate capabilities in law enforcement and the FBI, and they can take care of the issue on American soil. But there is an issue on American soil. There's no doubt about that as well.
Excuse me. I think there's probably one point that does need to be made here, and that is it's unlikely that there's going to be one single military retaliation that's somehow going to settle this, either for us or for them. It's much more likely, given the covert nature of these groups and how widely dispersed they are and the kinds of assistance they may get from a variety of governments, that what you'll see is a much more sustained campaign. I mean, in the first instance, we're interested in retaliation, partly because, you know, that's the way the human mind works and the human heart works. Partly you're interested in the hopes of punishing so that you can deter others from trying it again. But you're also interested in trying to destroy these organizations so that they can't do it again and destroy other organizations that might try and rebuild. And that's going to require a very sustained effort that's going to involve sustained military action of moderate and low level, not just high level, sustained intelligence action, sustained diplomacy, and life. You know, international political life is going to be very stressful for a lot of people right now. For us, for our allies, for countries that have been opposed to us, it's going to be a very stressful environment.
I think, Barry, what you're saying is exactly right. And if you continue with the Pearl Harbor analogy, there may be a Doolittle raid, but the Doolittle raid won't solve the problem here. This is going to be an effort that takes months and even years. It's going to put not only stresses on international diplomacy, but on national politics in many of these countries. We're going to come to their leaders, and we're going to ask them to do things that they're probably going to be uncomfortable with doing, breaking up groups, detaining people that we have suspicions of, and so forth. And it's going to be especially challenging for the moderate Arab governments. And yet, this is a time that they have to make the decisions to take sides in this. Are they on the side of modernization, or are they supporting those who would do such a terrible act?
Larry Goodson.
Let me just add to that that if we just think back to the 48 hours or so just prior to all of these events, and we look at what was happening around the Middle East, there were three or four separate suicide bombings in different locations, in Istanbul, in Israel, in northeastern Afghanistan, where Ahmed Shah Massoud was either killed or very severely wounded, the major opposition leader to the Taliban and to bin Laden. That particular event was also placed at the feet, probably correctly, of bin Laden. I think what I'm trying to say is I think that we are going to have to anticipate a sustained campaign. When we talk about bin Laden's organization in particular, the language that we always use is an umbrella organization of his own followers and sort of like-minded people in Harakat al-Mujahideen, in Lashkar-e-Taiba, in Islamic Jihad, and many organizations, many of them with adherents throughout the Middle East and indeed throughout the world. And it will take a sustained campaign. The cruise missile strike in 1998 is precisely what we can't do. We have to anticipate that this will take a long time and a number of different efforts on our part.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Matt is on the line.
Hi, thanks very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just calling because I'm very concerned with what I'm hearing. I've heard your guests and I've heard President Bush talk almost entirely about retribution, about retaliation, despite the fact that we still have no proof of who did this. Yet I'm hearing nothing about telling citizens to go out and give blood. I'm hearing nothing about trying to support
Matt,
those who are working on this.
Matt,
what's our priority?
Matt, let me first of all say that I know that people don't always listen to the entire program. It's 2 hours long. Barry Posen, my guest here in the studio, who I was asking a deeply theoretical question about international politics, prefaced his first set of remarks with precisely your thoughts. Nevertheless, this is an event that has happened, and we remain, all of us, still in a state of shock. And the important thing, I think, for this program to do is to talk about what will come next, because I think that there's a very strong sense that yesterday's events simply took international terrorism to a different level.
That may be. I still question our national priorities, reflecting in what the president has said, reflecting what the road that we seem to be heading down, which is a very militaristic one, and that frightens me very much.
Larry Goodson, you've traveled in Afghanistan.
If I could comment, I certainly endorse the idea that we should be focusing at this moment our thoughts and our prayers and all of our efforts on those people that have been harmed directly by this event. But at the same time, I don't think we're really talking about retribution here, per se. I think we're actually talking about if you're in a state of war, how you go about bringing that war to a successful conclusion, and that's less about retribution and more about preventing future occurrences.
But we don't even know who we're fighting against.
We're in the process of finding out, presumably, Wesley Clark.
That's exactly right. We are in the process of finding out. But the fact that the attacker is anonymous doesn't mean that it's not an act of war. If there had been two bombers flying over and they dropped bombs, we would have clearly seen it was an act of war. Instead, the aircraft themselves with those poor people on board were the bombs.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Aaron is on the line.
Yes, I wanted to know, since President Bush declared this as an act of war, does that mean NATO will now be pulled into it since it's an act against a NATO country?
Anybody?
Well, I think it is an act against a NATO country that involves NATO. And NATO has, Secretary General Robertson has made a statement of indicating the support of NATO nations. Most of the leaders have called the president, as I understand the news this morning, and naturally the United States will be working with its allies, but not only with NATO allies, with friends and allies everywhere.
Then do you see some of the operations that you've discussed about an ongoing sort of war against this umbrella network, do you think that will be carried out by the U.S. alone, or will it be a coordinated NATO effort?
I suspect that it will be done by many different nations using many means of coordination. NATO may be a useful forum for exchanging ideas and perhaps doing some coordination, but much will probably be done bilaterally.
I think Aaron raises the larger question, which we alluded to earlier, and that is, this is going to be a sustained campaign, and a lot of countries are going to be asked to do things that are unpleasant for them. They're going to be asked to do them for a long time. And we may face problems. NATO is now a very large organization with many, many countries in it. Usually the United States can get its way in NATO, as General Clark can surely discuss, but it may turn out that a lot has to be done bilaterally, because some of the more difficult and dangerous actions will be ones that different countries feel uncomfortable with, and we'll have to decide in each case how much pressure we want to apply. Every time we take an action that's difficult for others, we're going to have to apply pressure to those others. We're going to have to wield threats. We're going to have to engage power. So it's all going to be very, very tense and very difficult.
It's interesting. We're talking about a sustained period. Larry Goodson was mentioning this is going to take years, possibly. It's a war. And I'm just wondering about political will. One of the tragedy in the Balkans certainly was that it took years and hundreds of thousands of deaths for there to be a coincidence of political will on both sides of the Atlantic to actually try and do something to end that conflict. General Clark, you've been a political soldier. I mean, do you have any concerns today that 18 months from now the U.S. might find itself having to have, you know, the same kind of very painful arguments that it had when it was trying to, you know, get lift and strike, for example, as a policy in Bosnia?
Oh, I think those arguments will start right away with some of our friends and allies in terms of exchanging information and giving us access to other sources of information and so forth. But I think there's something else we have to understand about political will. On the one hand, a campaign like this is probably not going to result in great deployments of U.S. forces, and you won't see a Desert Storm type of an operation. But on the other hand, you can expect to see counter-punching back and forth. And an organization as sophisticated as that we're up against, with as many people as we know are trained, will certainly have been planning more than simply one operation against America and American interests. And so we don't know where the other shoe is going to fall, but there will be another shoe and another shoe after that. So there's an urgency about this. And I think that America has been, in many respects, with regard to terrorism, a sleeping giant. We've been awakened now. And those that did this have to understand that we will find them and we will track them down. And I'm very confident that there will be political will to go after this.
Let me add one thing to that, and it sort of comes back to the point that our earlier caller, Matt, I think, had made. I have no doubt that when the investigation is completed, the evidence is already mounting, that we will find the fingerprints of bin Laden's group, his general organization, as well as perhaps some states and other organizations all over this. But in fairness, we don't yet know. The last time we had anything like this was Oklahoma City, and that turned out to be a domestically inspired act of terrorism. So I do want to respond to that. But at the same time, I do think that that's not what's happening here. And what we're going to see is precisely what General Clark is talking about, a sustained effort. And as Professor Posen said, one that is going to probably require a great deal of arm twisting and pressure to maintain it. Unfortunately, it is going to be a campaign that is going to involve operations that will be extremely difficult to maintain the political will for. When we think back to what you just talked about a moment ago, Michael, which was an event in Sarajevo, really, shelling that brought Western attention finally to do something about the situation in the Balkans. At that same time, Kabul, Afghanistan was being shelled just as hard, and no one in the West paid the least bit of attention to it.
I think this question of will is fundamental. I mean, presuming that this attack does have an international origin and it is the beginnings of the kind of campaign we talk about, I think General Clark is right to point out that the blows are not all going to go one way. In other words, if this campaign is going to be pursued, then the United States of America has to expect to take casualties, to take more casualties, not necessarily civilian casualties here at home, but perhaps some more, perhaps civilian casualties abroad, perhaps military casualties abroad. People look for dramatic things to say about this, but I think the post-Cold War world ended yesterday.
I was just thinking about it. A lot of people have been saying, commenters, this is the day everything changed, without saying what everything is. And I wonder, General Clark, if you think that this is really the moment where America's reluctance to be militarily engaged anywhere on the planet, economically engaged all over, militarily engaged as well, if this is really the moment when things changed and, you know, whatever fears senior military people had about engagement in wars that had a clear objective, that didn't have an exit strategy, people will stop thinking that way and start thinking in a new way.
I think it is the beginning of something very much different for our country. But it's because it's asymmetric warfare. The armed forces of the United States as a whole aren't going to be challenged the way they were in the past. We're going to be out there in men and women in uniform as targets, but only a small portion are likely to be directly involved in carrying out this campaign. And instead, the political will that we need and the support and new understanding that we need is the engagement of the American people. For a decade, we've become progressively more inward-looking. We've been concerned about domestic issues. Our principal adversary was gone. Now we have another adversary. We understand that it's not a luxury to look outside our borders. It's a necessity. It's not just that our economy depends on it and our health depends on it, but our very security depends on it. And
Barry Posen is going to come in. We're coming to the break.
I think it's more fundamental than that. I think for the last 10 years, America has pursued a forward foreign policy, but it's pursued it in a funny way because it hasn't been explained to the American people very well. Their agreement hasn't really been sought. And the game that's played is that whoever's controlling the government, Republican or Democrat, if they want to do something abroad, their attitude is if we can find a way to control the cost, then we can pretty much do whatever we want. Right? Now, that luxury is over. Right. If the United States of America is going to pursue this particular fight, a fight that's going to involve costs, then we're going to have to sort of complete the debate on U.S. foreign policy that hasn't been completed. Right. And it may be that the completion of that debate will produce a generally interventionist foreign
policy.
Barry
Posen, I'm going to have to stop you there because we're coming to the end of the segment. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston.
I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is The Day After Connection. Yesterday at this time, I was seated in the studio watching the second tower of the World Trade Center collapse in on itself, live on the air with guests. We managed to have a conversation with you listeners that lasted the full 2 hours, and it was extremely difficult. This morning, the pictures, of course, are still smoldering buildings in downtown Manhattan and at the Pentagon. We know that 800 people died at the Pentagon. The death toll in New York is not known, but Mayor Giuliani, since we've been on the air, has given a press conference, and it's estimated that there are thousands from both towers still unaccounted for. While we've been on the air, the President, President Bush, has spoken to the nation from the Cabinet Room, called yesterday's events an act of war. And now we're talking in this hour with security experts, and the president's language has kind of forced us to look very far forward into response. The American response wasn't necessarily our plan at 8 a.m., but it is our plan now. And I'm talking with Barry Posen, who's professor of political science at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, retired U.S. Army General Wesley Clark, author of Waging Modern War, and Larry Goodson, Associate Professor of International Studies at Bentley College. Larry Goodson, you had a point.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to our previous discussion that General Clark and Barry had initiated that I do think we're going to see some changes in how we respond to this kind of threat and attack, assuming that it was international and that it was Osama bin Laden's organization or something similar. One of the things that we have been missing in the last decade, for example, is a substantial component of human intelligence. We have relied increasingly on signal intelligence, electronic intelligence. We did have, reportedly, some human intelligence coming out of bin Laden's organization. That was reportedly ferreted out and eliminated a little while back by bin Laden's people. And I'm wondering, probably we didn't really have. We're also lacking in some of our capacity for translation of the more unusual, non-Western, unusual to us perhaps, non-Western languages, Urdu, Arabic, Pashto in the case of Afghanistan, or Farsi. And then I think also we're going to see more enhanced capacity for special operations within the military community itself. So I just wanted to add those points.
Let me just ask General Clark, from your position, well atop the structural pyramid of the United States Army, did you feel that there was insufficient human intelligence coming from the Middle East?
Well, yes, we did. And we've known we've had a problem for 2 decades in the area of human intelligence. These groups are very difficult to get into. They're ideologically motivated. Many of them are family members. They come from specific villages. So you don't create false identities and move in easily. They're because they're very tough to penetrate and because they take their mission so very seriously, they're not motivated often by money either. It means that you just don't have the same access to information that we've had in the past in dealing with other problems. We've got to address this. We've got to have better human intelligence, and I think everybody recognizes that.
General Clark, just before I go to my next call, I just want to ask you, I mentioned at the start of the segment the death toll at the Pentagon. I can't imagine that you don't have friends who perished or that you have strong feelings this morning.
Well, I was just sick at seeing this yesterday, and we've been very concerned. My wife and I have been on the phone all day yesterday and again last night with family members, people we'd served with, our friends there. Fortunately, I believe the toll will be somewhat less than the higher estimates. I don't know if we've got an accurate, if the news has released an accurate number yet.
It's currently the wire service reporting.
It's a terrible tragedy, but it brings home once again that the men and women who serve in uniform and the civilians who work with them, because they are symbols of America, become targets, not only here but abroad. And it's something we've known in the armed forces for a long time.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Wren is on the line.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm finding that I'm feeling a far less, and a sadly so, regard for innocents of others in the Middle East. And I'm taking a look at what President Bush had said about the guilt of harboring nations being treated as those who had perpetrated. And I'm wondering if a sustained punishment of a harboring nation, whether it's Afghanistan or I have not heard much of Muammar Gaddafi mentioned, if that would be a focus to force a nation, a people, to rise up and give up a bin Laden or others who are...
Let me throw that to Larry Goodson, who's extremely familiar with Afghanistan.
Actually, I was asked this question on another show earlier this morning, and I said then, and I would say it again, I don't know what we could do to Afghanistan that hasn't already been done to Afghanistan. As I mentioned, a lot of Afghanistan looks like Lower Manhattan looks right now. It's rubble, and it's been largely destroyed by over 20 years of war. Likewise, we've had a very hard set of sanctions in place against Iraq since the end of the Gulf War, and it hasn't, you know, really forced Saddam Hussein to do anything. In fact, it's made him more popular in the Arab world. I can imagine that if we physically went after the leadership of the Taliban movement, and perhaps that's what President Bush was sort of alluding to, but I can't really imagine what we could successfully do against these poor, battered people that have suffered for over 20 years, and the vast majority of whom would be and will be, when they learn of this, absolutely appalled.
Wren?
I can believe that. I mean, the rash commentary of the occasional Palestinian about, oh joy, could only irk and ire those of us who heard it, but they are certainly not a people who are likely to be able to mount this up. And I have to believe, for all of what goes on with Arafat and the Israelis, he cannot possibly want anything to do with this, because he suffers to lose completely.
Absolutely. I think if this turns out in some fashion to have involved Hamas or Islamic Jihad or any of the organizations that are sort of in opposition to him within the Palestinian movement or within the broader core Middle East, Arafat will lose completely. It will finish him.
Ren, let me quickly, before I move on to my next call, ask you, you were talking about your heart hardening. Is this a morning after response, or is this...
Well, it's interesting. I talked with a number of friends, you know, over the phone. It was just, I mean, I felt like I did watching that building the other morning in tape. I felt as I did when I saw Challenger go up in smoke. There was just this enormous, enormous sense of loss. And it's not even so much a loss of innocence. It's just a pain that cannot really be adequately expressed. And here we have, I have to think tens of thousands are going to perish when the tallies are gone, just because we're talking about 110-story buildings, two of them, collapsing into the ground.
Ren, I want to thank you for your call and your thoughtful call.
Thank you.
Ren did, however, raise a very, very interesting point. We've had sanctions on Iraq since the end of Desert Storm. Saddam is still in power, and he's had adequate time to effectively break potential opposition leaders. The opposition to Saddam over a decade is fragmented to the point that, you know, frankly, it's impossible to imagine it running a nation. These countries, I mean, if one is strategizing, if you bring General Clark pressure on a regime, identifying the regime with the nation, does it necessarily follow that the regime will fall and be replaced in a positive way?
Well, I don't think the kind of pressure that we're talking about with sanctions and so forth is going to be effective against the government of the Taliban. This is more or less irrelevant to what they want. So I don't think we'll see that kind of pressure against that government. But remember, we don't know.
We're talking about harboring nations. The president spoke in the plural, and I know we don't know exactly who.
We don't know who. Now, some of these nations already have sanctions against them. Iraq, for example, Iran,
Afghanistan, and Pakistan.
It's typically pretty difficult to either sanction or even bomb countries into changing their government. I mean, it's very difficult. We've had little, if any, success with it, and many different theories have been advanced, and many have been tried. It's even difficult to bomb countries into changing their policies. Even that is very difficult business. I think some retribution has to happen here in the hopes of deterring future transgressors. But in the first instance, the thing you hope for out of military actions to try and destroy capabilities to do these kinds of things.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Pat is on the line.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm curious about the implications of the long-term commitment we're going to need from our allies in the climate of this, you know, the recent isolationist policies that the U.S. has been taking, you know, things like Kyoto and the like. Will that affect the resolve of our allies as time goes on and the going gets tough?
Barry Posen.
And I'll take this offline.
Okay. Thanks for your call.
This is a great question, because what the caller is asking is, how many different ways does our foreign policy change to try and deal with this problem? We're going to be looking for help from a lot of people. Help is going to be uncomfortable for them, and people are going to be looking for signs from us that we believe in cooperation, that we care about international politics beyond the narrow but extremely important question of who's done violence to the United States and when they've done it. So to elicit the kind of cooperation we want, the kind of willing cooperation that we want, the kind of sustained cooperation that we want, it may be necessary for the United States to consider carefully the path that it's been on in the last several years and to ask whether is it you know, gratuitously creating difficulties for us in international politics. So there may have to be some give and take if this strategy is to be successful. Now, we obviously don't want to talk about that right now. That's not, you know, in the first instance, you're interested in helping the people who are left alive and mourning the dead and trying to figure out who did this and trying to keep them from doing anything again soon. But this is, as we've said several times in this program, it's a sustained effort that's going to be required here, political, military, intelligence, law enforcement. A lot of resources are going to be expended on this, and great care will have to be taken in American diplomacy not to gratuitously spend political capital on things that maybe are not so important to us.
One small thing that happened recently, the Bush administration suddenly changed American policy towards India in the middle of, you know, the frightening nuclear standoff on the planet between Pakistan and India. For years, there'd been a tilt towards Pakistan, and then it seemed almost out of the blue, and certainly in Europe, it was reported as coming out of the blue. Allies didn't know that there was going to be a decisive tilt towards India suddenly. And I do wonder, I mean, if this kind of unilateral action is going to have to be reined back as the political price to be paid for full support for military action. Larry Goodson.
I'd actually say that really it was more in the latter days of the Clinton administration, a very small point, that we sort of tilted in the direction of India. But I wanted to add a point, which is that in the general discussion, we sort of not really thinking very much about those passengers and that particular flight that went down in Pennsylvania that was reportedly perhaps headed for the White House or some other main Washington target. But when you think about leaving aside the World Trade Center for just a moment, one flight did hit the Pentagon. The other one may have been headed for the White House or the Capitol or one of these other targets. That sort of suggests, and in thinking of how we would actually bring pressure to bear on the Taliban or Iraq or, you know, whoever it actually could be, I wonder if perhaps we might rethink our traditional policy, which is that we don't target heads of state, heads of government, heads of militaries per se. We target military forces in the field. But as has been
said, we have targeted heads of state. The CIA has been known to take out the occasional head of state.
Years and years ago, that is currently illegal under U.S. law. And I'm just wondering if in this new age that we were talking about, we may rethink this tool of foreign policy as well.
Larry Goodson, I want to thank you very much for your comments. Larry Goodson is the author of Afghanistan's Endless War. I imagine you'll have to be rewriting the final chapters.
Sadly.
I'd also like to thank General Wesley Clark, who joined us on a telephone line from Washington. Thank you very much, General Clark.
Pleasure to be with you.
And I'd also like to thank Barry Posen, Professor of Political Science in the Securities Study Department at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Connection listeners, this story continues to unfold, and we will be featuring it tomorrow. And in the meantime, I urge you to stay tuned to National Public Radio for all the latest news and updates. I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University,